is Pull Yourself Together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Well, hey, everybody.
Hi. How's it going? How's life out there in the world?
Besides hot.
Yes. It is hot, although today it is a little bit cooler.
Yeah, this is what we call false fall.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. And it will just, you know, go back to being
really hot in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And then we'll probably get a hurricane thrown in there, or at least a tropical storm before it's all over.
Why do you put that in the universe?
Sorry, it's just what false fall is all about. You're so hopeful and you think, oh, summer's over. And then,
yeah. All right. Well, on that note, what you been reading, Jessica?
Well, I've been reading a few things. August is our month that we take off from book clubs, but I've been completely engrossed due to Melissa in watching The Gilmore Girls, which I never watched.
I know.
It was a black hole in my cultural repertoire, and I feel much more in tune with the universe in general now. I'm pretty much done with season two and getting ready to start on season three. And I'm catching up slow but steady, but it has cut into my reading time, but I still managed to read a few books because that's what we do.
It's true.
We had a book group, which a store book group, which read Savage the Bones, I had started a few years ago and ended up finishing it, but it's a beautifully written, extremely dark read.
Well, it's Jessamyn Ward.
It is what she does. She kind of, I feel that this book reminded me very much of As I Lay Dying. It started out with something that seemed mildly hopeful and then devolved into a horrific series of events, all centered around Katrina. And what I didn't realize, but what I was reading about, is that Jessamyn Ward and her family actually lived through Katrina. They didn't realize it was coming and were hit by it and had to crawl out on their roof and be rescued by boat and make it to a neighbor's house. So it does explain why so much of her writing is so realistic. I know Melissa and I read
Sing Unburied Sing,
and she really puts you're in the story. Like, you are in the characters' minds. You're really, it's like you're living it when I read it. And it's pretty brutal. So this story starts out in Louisiana, and you've got a group of teenagers who are the main characters in the story. And I'm going to probably mispronounce names. Ish is the 15 years old, and her brother, Skeeta, has a fighting dog, China. And a lot of the story centers around China, and China has puppies. They just don't have, you know, Skeeta is really excited because he can sell the puppies for $200. Yeah.
Sorry, I have a really hard time with this. Like, even just listening to what this book is about, I have a really hard time with this. Yeah.
So I'll be quick, and I'll give a summary of it, because it centers around China, really, and her birth of the puppies, and their lack of resources in being able to care for these puppies properly, the whole culture of dog fighting in this neighborhood that we're in. And then at the beginning of the book, we also find out that Ish, who's watching the dog give birth and then sees the puppies born, then sees them nursing, and then goes outside and throws up. Then they all get in the car and they go to the grocery store to buy dog food, and she shoplifts a pregnancy test, and you realize that she's pregnant, And the father really wants nothing to do with her. And she's trying to figure out how to tell him and doesn't know what his reaction is going to be. So there's the tension of that in the book. Then there's the tension of their father, who is an on and off again. I mean, well, he's an alcoholic and an on and off again drinker, so very unreliable. Their mother has died. Their grandparents are gone. They're living in poverty. They do have a group of friends who does things together in a neighborhood, in a community, but there's not really any sense of anything getting better in this book. This isn't a book where we start here and then we end up with a happy ending at all.
Yeah, her books don't do happy endings.
No, they don't do happy endings. So I think books like this are important so we can understand other people's lives and the way they live, and insert ourselves in them for a moment. But it is a lot to take on. And I think having the dog in there makes it even more... I don't know why we can somehow sympathize with dogs sometimes and animals more than we can with humans, but between the unwanted pregnancy, the hurricane, the destruction of everything they own, and everything that happens with China, I'm not going to lie, it is a good read and it is worth your time, but it is a rough read. And I think you need to kind of prepare yourself going in for that. I highly recommend it, but again, just I've given you your warnings now. She is an amazing writer, and she really does capture, I think, what Faulkner was saying, but in a way that is more accessible for a lot of the reading public, if that makes sense.
Because mm-hmm. Much of Faulkner does not.
Well, he uses a different style, I think. Maybe Jessamyn Ward is a little more sober when she's writing.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Which would be hard.
Yeah, it would not take much. That is a very low bar.
So starting out on that super happy note, mm-hmm. Melissa, what have you been reading?
Well, you know, not that. there was a book that came out several years ago called If We Were Villains by M.L. Rio. And I absolutely love that book. Like, if you have read The Secret History by Donna Tartt and you're looking for, like, your next mm-hmm. book like that, like, If We Were Villains is a good place to go. It has that same sort of academic setting. And in that particular book, they're dealing with more Shakespeare than classics. Mm-hmm. But it has that same sort of feeling, and I really loved it. And so I've been waiting for M.L. Rio to put out another book, much like I've been waiting for Donna Tartt to put out another book.
Probably have to wait longer for Donna.
It's been 10 years. It's been over 10 years.
She does what she does the way she does it.
I know. I don't have to be happy about it.
No.
But anyway, so... M.L. Rio has a new novella coming out, and it comes out in September. Mm-hmm. It's called Graveyard Shift, and it is, like I said, it's a novella, so it is just a little bit over 100 pages. It is very, very slim, but it is such a complete and engrossing story there's something really amazing to me about people who can write so succinctly and still make the characters flesh out and still make the story like engrossing in such a short amount of time.
So that's why I love short stories. I think writing a short story is much harder sometimes because you have to condense things so much than writing a full novel often.
Well, I would agree with that, but it's like, that's why I don't like a lot of short stories sometimes, is because I don't feel like that's accomplished, but the mm-hmm. ones that do it well, I really enjoy.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is called Graveyard Shift, and it is about a group of five people who work the night shift, and they, like, from
various walks of life, like that the only thing they have in common is that they're up all night. And they meet up each night in this old cemetery because that's where they go for their smoke breaks because they can't smoke.
Okay.
And so there's a college setting that's involved in this because one of them is the editor of the school paper. One of them had been a student but has dropped out because of financial reasons. So they're all sort of connected a little bit with the college just because it's a college town. So they're in the churchyard, and in the cemetery, they find a newly dug grave. And they're like, well, this wasn't here last night, and they're not burying people in this cemetery because the church is derelict.
That's disturbing.
Right. So they're trying to figure out what is happening here. And so it becomes almost Scooby-Doo-esque, like as they're trying to solve this mystery. And I'm not going to tell you too much about it because I think it is really, really interesting. And I think it's a very well done story. But there's, I mean, it's kind of just like a buddy mystery story.
Okay, so there is there's a murder. Maybe.
No.
No? Okay. But there's a mystery.
There is a mystery.
There could have been.
I mean, they're trying to figure out why someone dug this hole.
Right.
And you find, like, they wait around to see, because the earth is still even wet. So, like, I mean, this was dug recently.
Right. It's fresh.
Yeah. So they wait around to kind of see, well, they go off on their separate ways, but one of them waits around to see kind of what's going on, right? And so then it goes from there, and they're trying to figure out, like, why this is happening. Like, because what goes in the hole does not make any sense to them.
Okay.
And there's another sort of little, like, side piece in town where they've been having, they call them hostile incidents, where, like, seemingly normal people have just gone off the rails with, like, rage. And that's happened, like, three separate times in the town, and three kind of unrelated people. They have nothing in common. There's, like, no history of violence. So that's also out hanging around. But, yeah, it's I read it in one sitting. Like I said, it's like it's 112 pages. What I love, too, is that at the end she has a playlist for the book. And the playlist is great.
Yeah.
And then she also has a cocktail menu for two different drinks because one of the one of the characters in the book runs a bar.
Okay.
And the one drink does figure into the story a little bit. But it's a really good sort of nice creepy mystery, like coming up for fall season.
Nice. Ready for that. Ready for those, to use a trite phrase, ready for those fall vibes.
Bring on the pumpkin spice lattes.
You know how I feel about flavored coffee, but
well, there's nothing more fall or August because pumpkin spice lattes are available now.
Ew, no, I can't. Sorry. I don't live in that part of the world. Okay. All right. Well, as you can tell, Melissa and I are longing for fall, but it is endless summer here. So the book I'm going to talk about next comes out in March of 2025, but it is, ARCs are going out, and it is our friend Patty Callahan Henry. And it is very, if you like Patty Callahan and you especially like the direction she's been going in recently, then this is definitely going to be the book for you. I'm not sure it was the best book to read as I was reading Savage the Bones because they're very different books.
No,
no, very, very different books. And, but this one was, so this one has at the heart of it, a mother-daughter relationship and then a mother-daughter relationship. It starts out in Bluffton, South Carolina, which we know Patty is from that area. So she writes beautifully and very realistically about the marshes and the beach and the rivers and everything there. And So we meet our main characters who are, the first main character is Clara. And at the time we meet her, she's 8 years old and her mother is there. And her mother, Bronwyn, is a famous writer. And she has married, and a child prodigy. And she has married a doctor who's from Bluffton, South Carolina. And so they're living there. And she has one famous book that she's published, and then she hasn't really written anything else, but she loves words, and she is has invented this secret language. So it's 1927, and she, one night, we see her taking the boat out and heading towards Savannah from the Bluffton area. There's just a kind of, it's a pretty straight shot to Tybee from there. And then the boat is found, the mother is gone, nobody knows what happens to her. It's assumed that she has taken her next novel and, you know, jumped overboard and that's the end of it. But it's a mystery. And then we go forward to 1952, and Clara, her daughter, has grown up, has married and divorced, is living with her father in their child in her childhood home, and she's an illustrator for children's novels. And she has just won a Caldecott Medal, which is a huge deal. And all of this is going on in her life, and she's teaching art and kind of moving along with her life when she gets a phone call from England, from Charlie. And he is going through his father's effects. His father has just passed away, and he's in London, and he finds this briefcase, leather satchel, that has a note for Clara from her mother in it and a dictionary of all the words that her mother has used in writing, like a guide, a Rosetta Stone, to the language she's created, because Clara has a copy of the book, but it's all in this language. So it needs to be translated. So the instructions are that it can't be mailed and it can't be shipped. So ultimately, Clara has to go over with her own daughter, Winnie, who's named after Bronwyn, her mother, to London. And when they arrive, they're right in the middle. Winnie was premature and has problems with asthma, and they get into London, and it's the great smog. And so Winnie starts having terrible problems with her asthma. They have to go to the country, the Lake District, where Charlie's family has a house. And the rest of the story goes from there. It's about reuniting with somebody that, you know, you thought was gone, solving certain mysteries. But it's also about the mother-daughter relationship. There's a little bit of a love story in it. There are beautiful descriptions of the countryside in England and writing. There's a little Beatrix Potter moment in there. And all in all, it's a perfect book to come after Patty's last book. So The Story She Left Behind by Patty Callahan Henry, which will be out March 4th, 2025. And we will be doing an event with her too. So you'll have a chance to hear her talk.
Okay. So the next thing I was going to talk about. So Barack Obama put out his summer reading list, and it made me feel good because I had read several of the same books that he had read. And one of them that was on his list was literally in my stack of stuff to be read this month. So I moved her up to the top because if my man Obama enjoys it, it's a good chance I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So this book is called Help Wanted by Adele Waldman. She has one other book, which I have not read, but when I was looking like about information about her, the book is called The Love Affairs of Nathaniel P. And when that book came out, there were a couple of different reviews that compared her to Jane Austen, which really makes me want to read that book. And actually, after reading this book, I'm very curious to read that book as well. But this book is interesting. It is very much ordinary people doing ordinary things. So mm-hmm. if that is not your thing, this will probably not be the book for you.
So if you're looking for an action-packed thriller, this is not the book for you.
No. Okay. So this is about a crew of people who are basically the inventory processing crew at...
Oh, you've been talking about this book. Yeah. It sounds fantastic.
It is strangely compelling, but it's... so it's about these people who unload the trucks and put out all the freight at a big box store, which... based on the description that's given in the book, is essentially like Target. Mm-hmm. So it's these people who come in and work 4 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock in the morning every day. They are not wealthy, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're working class people who are struggling financially, because they work for a corporation which refuses to let them have full-time hours. They will have lots of hours when the store is busy, and then they cut them to essentially nothing when the store is not. So they have no like set amount of income. A lot of them have to work two jobs to make mm-hmm. ends meet. Most of them don't have cars and are walking down like a shoulderless highway to get to work, or riding their bike to get there.
That sounds like what I see every morning.
Yeah. I mean, but they come and they do their job mm-hmm. and they're there every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning doing their work. So there is the group of the like hourly employees, and then mm-hmm. they have above them a group manager, which isn't a salaried position. But an actual full-time position.
Right.
And then above that is kind of the assistant manager position of the store, which is mm-hmm. over kind of logistics, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And then they have the, you know, store manager. So the store manager is getting promoted to a new store, and they've decided they want to promote from within mm-hmm. To move one of the assistant managers up into the store manager position. And it's really between two people, one of which is the manager of the logistics mm-hmm. Thing. So none of the people that work for her like her. Like mm-hmm. she's terrible. She's awful to them. She thinks she's so much better than them. Like she's just terrible.
Doesn't really do a good job of managing people then.
No, she doesn't. And so they're torn because they don't want her to succeed because mm-hmm. they know she's not good at her job. But on the other hand, their thought process is, well, if she becomes a store manager, we're not going to really have to deal with her because they generally come in mm-hmm. at 7:30, quarter to 8. We leave at 8. Our interaction will be
minimal.
Like, so she will really have no effect on our lives anymore. And then they're also thinking, like, their group manager is great. Like, he's mm-hmm. wonderful. He does a great job. Their thought is that he's going to get promoted into her job, and that one of them will become their group manager, which is great because it comes with full-time hours mm-hmm. and all of them could really use that.
Yeah.
So they've got this plan that when the people from corporate come to, you know,
interview them, how do you feel about your boss,
yes,
all that.
That they're going to sing her praises, she's going to get this promotion. And then they start to actually really think about that and mm-hmm. what that could mean. So it really is honestly just the day-to-day of these people coming in and doing their job.
But it seems like it's a good glimpse into sort of what people have to deal with in this economy.
Yeah, I mean, she's not heavy-handed with it, but mm-hmm. she is saying a lot about how corporations treat their employees and mm-hmm. how we let this go on and how these people...
Like, and then we shame these people for, you know, but they're getting up doing their job every day.
Yeah, and they're coming in and doing the job that they have and working and all the hours that are available to them.
And the job is essential. Like, mm-hmm. you can't go to Target and pick up whatever if somebody isn't filling the shelves. I mean, have you been there after a busy Sunday?
Yeah,
it's yes.
Well, and that's part of the discussion is in this as well, is that the store is so focused with staying on budget with payroll and all these different things that like shelves are empty and their like stock room is full of all this stuff that they literally can't get out onto the floor because they won't give them the hours to do it.
Which is a problem because you know where you can't sell stuff from? The back room.
Yeah, this is a discussion we have at the bookshop all the time.
I mean, we know this too.
But it's, yeah, like I said, it's oddly compelling. And reading this, because I worked as a teenager at Kmart, like, mm-hmm. so like I am very aware of how this whole process works in a large store like that. And she gets it exactly right. I was like, mm-hmm. she had to have, like, there is no way she knows this that well. And, like, the terms for all of it. And
she had to have done this at some point.
Which she did. When her kid, when her daughter was a year old, she was working on one of these crews mm-hmm. and was, you know, like, there's a book here. And, like, there absolutely is. It really is, again, like, I just, oddly compelling. But so if you like sort of just like the everyday sort of workplace kind of book, there are moments of levity in mm-hmm. it too. So it's not just,
it's not unrelenting.
No. It's not unrelenting misery. And like, it's
helpful.
Just,
I mean, not so much.
I mean,
maybe.
I guess, yes, a little bit. I mean, it's not like it doesn't end with them all like getting a promotion mm-hmm. and they all make more money and they get a great boss and all this. Like, that's not how life always works. Not what this is about. Like, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's just these, like, again, like these people who I like have this dignity about coming in mm-hmm. and doing their job and like they're
trying to do the best with the lot they've been given in life mm-hmm. and trying to improve their lives and and survive in this economy.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so Help Wanted by Adele Waldman.
Very good. Well, I'm going to talk about something completely different. And I'm going to be very careful because I know Melissa wants to read this book.
And, yes, and it is.
So I am not going to spoil. I am not finished with it because it's
a chonker.
It's a chonker, and there's a lot in it. And really, to catch everything I want to, I've been listening to it kind of in bursts. And of course, listening to a book goes more slowly. I'm still having a little trouble with my eyes, so listening is the best way. And but I'm completely engrossed. And so it's Lev Grossman's new novel, The Bright Sword, and it is an Arthurian novel,
which is catnip. I love the King Arthur.
And so the question is, the king is dead. What happens now? And we start out so the hero of the book is, the epic really is Colum. And you meet him as a boy and he has supposedly been apprenticed to this knight and is supposed to be learning how to be a knight, but really they're just using him as a kitchen boy, as a whipping post.
Has anyone seen Sword in the Stone?
Yes.
That's it. What Wart is doing.
Yeah. I mean, he's being soundly abused by everyone. He ultimately makes his way on to the, you know, to be trained and does...
onto the night JV team.
Yeah, onto the night JV team by basically just going in there and going after what he wants. And he is a good fighter. But it becomes obvious that he's going nowhere in this life. So he steals a suit of armor and then heads out to find Camelot.
And like you do.
Like you do, on a quest, because quests are important. Mm-hmm. And along the way, you know, he fights people. He learns about what it's like to be off the little island that he grew up on, about the wider world. But when he finally arrives in Camelot, he finds it not to be there anymore, really, just in complete shambles. Everything is a mess. His his hero was killed in battle 2 weeks before. The king is dead, as far as they can tell. And the only knights that are left are sort of the lesser knights in the story. So he gets there with these lesser knights, and it he's been brought up as a Christian. Sorry, there's just so much in this story, and I just want to tell the very beginning of it. But he's been brought up as a Christian, and there is this battle still going on between elemental magic, fairies, the fae, and the old pagan religions, and the new Christian religion. And because Arthur is gone, all of the old pagan rites, fairies, magic are coming back into the world, and it really is a battle between the new Christian world and the old world. And so you end up meeting up with, I'm going to mispronounce the name, Nyume, N-I-M-U-E, who was Merlin's assistant.
Yeah,
and
I don't,
has trapped Merlin in the mountain.
It's like Nyume or something
Nyume?
Like that.
Yeah. And she has Christian faith, but she also has all this elemental magic. So she's a conflicted character in this. And so they try to figure out what they want to hope for. Do they want to try to go through these magical portals and into these worlds and bring Arthur back? Do they want a new king? What is the future of Camelot?
JFK, that's the future of Camelot.
There's a musical in there somewhere. And the story kind of meanders along, and there are a few chapters that are backstories, but all in all, it's all important. So there's nothing in there, even though at moments you'll be like, why are we going down this hole? There's nothing that's superfluous. It all needs to be in there. So if you like fantasy, if you like Arthurian legends, if you want to be back in this world, Grossman does a fantastic job with this. It's that story. Mm-hmm. It's that same story. Like, what do you love about the Arthurian stories?
I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's just the, you know, that constant fight of good versus evil. Like, mm-hmm. And I mean, in the really kind of, like, you know, like Sword in the Stone or mm-hmm. like in those versions of King Arthur, I mean, it's very, he's absolutely right. And mm-hmm. like, but in all the other tellings of it, there's all these shades of gray and nobody is 100% good and no one is 100% evil. And I like that kind of, I like the existence in the shades of gray, because it's like, if you have like someone like Superman, who is
right.
just so
perfect
and good. Like, I find Superman to be the most boring character ever.
So Batman.
Like, I love Batman because mm-hmm. Batman exists in shades of gray.
He's complicated.
Yeah.
Well, this is very much like this. It is not straightforward. And the knights that are in there are sort of the secondary ones. Like, do you remember Sir, I'm going to mispronounce his name too, Dragonet? He was the jester that King Arthur turned into a knight, mm-hmm. kind of as a joke. Mm-hmm. But here he is, and now he's got to be a knight. And there's Sir Dinadan?
I don't know how to pronounce the names.
anyway, it's just, ultimately, he kind of, without giving away too much, there's one battle where it's literally magic versus angels, biblical angels. And what comes to understand is that they're fighting out these wars and they don't care anything about humanity.
Well, I mean, if you
every story I've ever read that involves angels kind of dealing with humanity, angels are always like, hey, BT Dubs, God created us to be his like servants, basically. And we do all of these things, but he gave you all free will, which we don't have. How would that, like, how is that fair?
Yeah. Well, that, yes. So, yeah, it's so.
I also really enjoy angels being slightly shady because they're well, angry. And
hello, Lucifer.
That's what yeah. I'm saying.
I mean, there's a reason why they fell, and there yeah. was a great battle in heaven. Yeah, no, I yes. So it's you know, it is Camelot at its down and outest, and nobody is. You know, who they hope to be or how they thought they would be living their lives. And yet they...
It's like Camelot at its 10-year high school reunion. Yeah.
But they still have to figure out how to go on and have their adventures and keep hoping for a better day. And I think this book... leans into the Arthurian mythos and will become part of that canon. I mean, it doesn't lean in. It will be part yeah, of it. Yeah.
It is that.
But I think it will stay within those books that we all pick up and read.
Like The Crystal Cave. Right. And The Once and Future King.
All of those things, yes.
And, I mean, for all its issues, The Mists of Avalon.
Yes. Oh, boy. I love that series. Sometimes I think maybe we should just leave authors' lives alone and just enjoy the books.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So anyway, I didn't spoil anything.
No. I knew it was King Arthur. Yeah. I knew a little bit about it going into it.
But I highly recommend it. It is engrossing. And if you need to jump out of this world, this is definitely the book for you.
All right. So last time when I was talking with Jenny, I was saying that I had been reading, at that time, The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley, mm-hmm. which I finished that book and it was fine. I don't have strong feelings either way about it, but mm-hmm. I was curious to read something else by her because that was really like her first, right? So I read The Guest List, which is the second book that came out, mm-hmm. And it really is the exact same setup of a book, right? So mm-hmm. you've got a group of people mm-hmm. put together at a remote location for something that should be happy. There's lots of tensions underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, someone ends up dead. And kind of how we get there. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of different players who could be the person that killed them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this one is set on a remote island off the coast of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And this island has a really, like, troubled history. There's... these peat bogs, and they found all these bodies basically buried in the peat bogs where like almost the whole population of the island was mm-hmm. slaughtered by Vikings. And so it comes from that sort of past. And there is now on this island a kind of exclusive event venue, right?
I've read this book.
Have you read this book?
I've read this book. You were talking about it. I'm like, wait a minute.
Okay, so there's an exclusive yeah. event venue, and the first wedding they're having there is the wedding of a magazine publisher mm-hmm. and her fiancé, who it has... like a Survivor-esque TV show mm-hmm. where like they put him in the wild and he has to survive.
Naked and hungry.
Well, I don't know if he's naked, but
yes. Yeah.
And so then So you hear from the perspective of the bride-to-be, mm-hmm. you hear the perspective of the wedding planner, who's mm-hmm. the one who owns this event venue.
Yeah.
You hear from the bride's half-sister.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's some tension there.
Yes, there is definitely some tension there. Then you hear from the best man,
mm-hmm.
who was not necessarily intended to be the best man.
No.
You hear from... The bride has a really good friend who is a guy named Charlie, but you hear from Charlie's wife, mm-hmm. Hannah, that yeah. the plus one is basically how she's referred
Hannah,
to.
Hannah's not having a good time at this wedding.
No, she's not, because to get to this wedding, yeah. you obviously have to take a boat, mm-hmm. and... It is not easy going on the crossing over to this island. There's no. a lot of seasickness. She gets there and she's already miserable and doesn't really feel like she fits in with all of these people. So the ushers at the wedding are all, and the best man mm-hmm. are all former schoolmates of the groom. And they're all just horrible. They all went to like boarding school together yeah. and it was basically like Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. And they're the ones that survived and formed this bond.
Well, and were terrible to the other kids mm-hmm. they went to school yeah. with, and are so proud of the fact that they were terrible to the other kids they went to school with. So they're those guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drinking.
There is a lot of drinking.
There's drug use. So they're there for the day before the wedding, and then a lot of the action happens that night, mm-hmm. and then most of the action actually happens the day of the ceremony. And you don't, so there's like a chapter where that's kind of stuck in as you're going along, mm-hmm. and it's one of the servers has found a body during yep. During the reception.
Well, and there's, if I recall,
there's a huge storm.
Huge storm.
A huge yeah. storm happening, and as you do.
Yeah.
And so the server has found a body, and it goes sort of back and forth mm-hmm. in time from like when the reception is happening and then as they're leading up to yeah. to the actual ceremony. I will say, the last one, the hunting party, mm-hmm. I did figure out who had done it.
Yeah.
This one, I wasn't sure. I had it between two people, and mm-hmm. it ended up being one of the people that I suspected.
But they were all truly, most of everybody was so awful. Yeah, it was hard to figure out.
But there was, I mean, like, the groom especially is fairly awful. Mm-hmm. There was motivation for the person who mm-hmm. like for the person who ends up dead and the person who ended up being the one that killed them. There was some motivation.
Yeah.
It was not completely just.
Oh, it wasn't random.
No. I would say that I liked this one much more than I liked mm-hmm. the hunting party. But again, like with the hunting party, it was all kind of terrible people that I didn't really like.
Yeah.
This is sort of a similar situation. Mm-hmm. But if you like that sort of like lockroom mystery, mm-hmm. This is a good one. I'd be curious to read something by her that is not that same.
Right. Well, this, I read The Hunting Party years ago when it came out, and then we read this for Mystery Book Group right when it first started. So
yeah.
it's been quite a while since I read it. That's why I'm like, wait a minute, I've read this book. Because I definitely remember the peat bogs play a big role in this book. I mean, they're described a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's one of those sort of like red herring things
yeah.
that you think like that's going to...
Right, but yes.
Yeah.
And I also very much like the chef and his wife that run the venue. Mm-hmm. So it was a good discussion book for book group. It was pretty much a thumbs up mm-hmm. as far as mysteries go. And it is a very good sort of locked room mystery.
Mm-hmm.
If you like those, and they're as well, anyway, I know, I think your next book you're going to talk about is T.J. Newman, but as she was saying when you two were in conversation, it is much easier to plot a book when you have a limited amount of people all working towards a similar kind of goal.
Yes.
Yes. And the goal is murder.
Yeah. Well, I don't, sorry, it's like, I don't think any of these people were working towards the same goal.
No, no, they weren't actually. Okay. That's it. Yeah. But
other than being drunk off their ass.
Yeah. There was a lot of drinking, and for, the characters who weren't into that, it was a pretty rough ride.
I'm not sure there was anybody that wasn't drinking.
No, I guess they were all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there were a lot of, it's the classic thing where there's just like all these little tensions simmering under the surface of all these like really great friends. And I'm using air quotes again, because you can see that.
Yes.
but it's like all these people that supposedly like each other, but really hate each other for a various number of reasons.
But they all decided to show up for the wedding.
Well, because they have to, because they're best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously. Obviously. Well, very good. Well, the last one I'm going to talk about is one that most of you have probably read.
Well, and this is just really random because I started reading this book. And I was telling Jessica, I was like, hey, so I'm reading this book out loud, like, because my husband and I, like, I'll read a book out loud, like, a couple chapters each evening, and then we'll just read whatever we're, like, other books that we're reading. I was like, hey, we started reading this, and Jessica was like, well, that's weird, I started listening to that. Like, so we're both randomly reading this at the same time.
But I, but it was, it's good, and I listened to it, and it was, Gollum, who...
Andy Serkis. Gollum is not his actual name.
I know. It is not his actual name. I mean, we all know him as Gollum, but Andy Serkis is the narrator for the audiobook that I listened to, and he
and,
did...
And we're talking about The Hobbit, in case you were not aware.
Sorry.
We didn't say that. So, The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
Not Lord of the Rings.
Not Lord of the Rings. The Hobbit, which I... so, when I was younger... The Hobbit was really, C.S. Lewis and The Hobbit were my childhood introductions into high fantasy.
Yeah. And I feel like they're most children's introductions into high
fantasy.
Yes,
that and the, Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, I would go back and reread, I called it my ring cycle, reread The Lord of the Rings, kind of every summer when I'd get out of school and had time to just read what I wanted to. Those Jane Austen, I had a certain set of books I read, but I hadn't read The Hobbit in a long time.
I honestly don't think that I read The Hobbit since I read it in school. We read it in fourth grade. Like I vividly remember because that was the year that we were in the extra trailer that was, and I can remember talking about The Hobbit in there, and it's not because I didn't like it. It's just because I just didn't pick it up again.
Yeah. Well, my uncle had actually given me a copy in the fourth grade. We didn't read it in the fourth grade, but we had to do a book report on something we'd read outside of school. And I did my book report on The Hobbit, and I drew the whole thing on poster boards. And so I remember it very vividly.
Nerd.
Yeah. I know. It was, but most of my teachers and friends were like, huh. The Hobbit. I wouldn't have expected, you know, that it was, anyway, I loved it. And from then on, I was always looking for my next sort of fantasy book because I loved being in those worlds. And I just find his storytelling so compelling for me. And I don't always love all the segues with the elves singing or, but the story, I love an epic quest like that.
Yeah. I mean, reading it out loud, I would say like I'm drawn into the story. Like I really do enjoy this story. But I don't necessarily love some of the way that he puts sentences together in The Hobbit. Mm-hmm. And the writing is very different from The Lord of the Rings. Like the style that he uses is very different. And it's, I don't necessarily enjoy the style of it as much
as the, well, I think the difference is with this, and I noticed it very much, especially because Melissa had pointed this out when I was listening to it, is the style is very much for children, and they do a lot of explaining like you're explaining to a child, whereas in Lord of the Rings, they expect you to be more mature, and it is a, definitely a more mature story, although on some levels, fairly accessible for children. And so I think he's trying to use a childlike epic storytelling device to kind of, but there is a lot of, and you'll know that this, this, and this to explain.
And that doesn't bother me as much as it's like sometimes, like really reading it out loud, some of the sentences are just awkwardly formed, which is strange. And I get that it's his first book that he published. And mm-hmm. again, it's written for children. And like I said, I love the actual story of it.
The like, story it, yeah. is so good. And I, like, I started out reading it, and I'm like, I'm not going to be engaged as much as I normally am because, you know, and by, like, the second chapter, I couldn't stop. It became not my side book, but my main book, and I listened to it every night, and I was really sad when I finished.
Well, and the other thing that struck me about it is I know Jessica does not like the movies that they did of The Hobbit. I like them. I will say that there is a bunch of stuff in them that is not in The Hobbit. But there were a lot of things mm-hmm. that were in those movies that I didn't recall being in The Hobbit. Like, they do talk about the necromancer in The Hobbit. They yes. do mention Radagast. Like, yeah. I thought, like, the whole part with Bjorn, like, I didn't even remember that being in the book. So mm-hmm. rereading it after having read it so long ago, like I was like, oh, that like that was in there. Okay. Like I'm not.
Yeah. No.
Peter Jackson wasn't crazy.
No. I mean, well, not completely. But no, I didn't like that they split it into
three movies. Yeah.
I think it could have been one at the very most two. But yes, there is more in it as I was listening to it this time. For anyone out there who's not familiar with the story of The Hobbit, we start out with Bilbo Baggins, who's the main character, and he is just enjoying his hobbity life in his little comfortable hobbit hole, smoking his pipe, eating good food, hanging out with his friends, and not wanting to go on any adventures. And then Gandalf, who is the wizard, shows up at his door and has a conversation with him.
Well, and then basically volunteers him to go on this expedition with a group of dwarves yep. who are trying to take back their
ancestral
home and the treasure that's there, which is now being guarded by a dragon.
Yes.
Because, and like, what hobbit doesn't want to run off on a large quest to end with a dragon? Or what he thinks will end with a dragon.
Yes. And so it greatly expands Bilbo's world. You find out that he has more in him than you think he does and than he thinks he does. And we're introduced to this whole cast of characters which set the stage for The Lord of the Rings. And I love the interaction with the elves and his fascination with that. I really like the character of Bjorn, who is a man who can turn into a bear. Their journey through Mirkwood is very interesting to me, and the spiders and just everything that happens to them. There are 14 of them, and they have many almost deadly adventures along the way, and they manage to finally get to the Misty Mountains, and then there's the dragon when they get there, which
the Misty Mountains.
Not the Misty Mountains.
The Lonely Mountain.
The Lonely Mountain, which is after the Misty Mountains, yes. But is also misty.
Well, I mean, it's vapory.
It's vapory.
Dragon steamy.
Yes, it's very dragon steamy. If you haven't read The Hobbit, and you're like, oh, it's a children's book, really, you should pick up The Hobbit. If you enjoy fantasy, this is sort of the roots of a lot of classic fantasy. And he does take myths from the Germans and the Norse, and he kind of rolls all of it in together and makes this wonderful adventure story. Mm-hmm. So I will always recommend The Hobbit.
Well, and I think The Hobbit is interesting as opposed to The Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. like The Lord of the Rings is definitely a good versus evil story. Like there are no shades of gray in Lord of the Rings. It is very much
evil is taking over the world. We must
conquer
this evil.
I think The Hobbit actually has a little shades of gray in it.
It does, because the elves are not all great in
it. And there, the interaction with Thorin and the lake men
is not good.
Is not good. And yeah, like, so there are
shades of gray, and there are people who are good people who make bad decisions or are momentarily taken over by their greed or lust or, mm-hmm. And so, yes, I agree with you that there are more shades of gray in The Hobbit. It's not a clean-cut good versus evil. It sets us up for the coming good versus evil, but it definitely has its moments where you're like, oh, well, that's not, like, it's not, the elves in Mirkwood are not as straightforward as the elves you meet in Rivendell.
You don't spend a lot of time with the elves in Rivendell, honestly. Like the moment with like they spend a lot of time in Rivendell, but mm-hmm. what you see of the time that they spend in Rivendell is really just Elrond talking about the runes.
Yeah. Like it's storytelling. And
I mean, there's not, like, that's the other thing that struck mm-hmm. me about it is that a lot of these scenes in the book are very, very short. Like mm-hmm. the interaction, like the scene with the trolls,
right,
is like 2 pages long. I mean, it is very short. Like, so some of these kind of like more epic scenes that they expanded in the movies
right.
are really very short things that you don't get a ton of description of.
No, but it's enough. It is mm-hmm. enough. I mean, you understand. And as someone who doesn't do well with tension, I'm always glad that kind of tension, like, are they going to be squished or made
so
into jelly?
You just need to read children's books.
Yes, I just
that level of tension is fine.
Good for me. Yes. I can take 4 pages of tension.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And what I would really love to do is go through and listen to The Lord of the Rings again. But I don't have time right now. But I think I will save it. Maybe when we're traveling in England, it might be my nighttime sort of fall asleep
sure.
book. So do you have anything else, Melissa? I think you do.
Yeah. So Jessica alluded to it earlier, but we just had an event with TJ Newman for the release of her new book called Worst Case Scenario. So I was in conversation with her. So I read all of her books, like one after another. And as I told her, I'm very much looking forward to my transatlantic flight next month. Yeah. if you're not familiar with TJ Newman, she burst on the scene a few years ago with her debut book called Falling. She is a former flight attendant. She also is a former bookseller.
Yes.
Who writes these epic cinematic action books that involve airplanes and bad things happening with them.
Bad plane. Yeah. Bad things happening on planes. Yeah.
So the newest one is a little bit of a departure because there is a plane involved, and within the first 5 pages of the book, mm-hmm. the plane has crashed. Like, the plane is the catalyst for the action in this. It's not the main focus of the action mm-hmm. as it has been in her 2 books previously. So basically, a commercial passenger jet mm-hmm. With over 200 people on board crashes into a nuclear power plant.
So I'm going to guess that there's survivors from this plane crash.
No, no one survivors. No one from the plane survives. Really, the plane crash
is the catalyst.
Is the catalyst. There is she, as you get further along in the book, she kind of describes what happened with the plane as it was crashing and mm-hmm. why there's debris from this plane crash kind of all over this small town, because this happens in a very rural community in Minnesota, and the plane's wings have come off and have caused...
A lot went wrong.
But because there is debris from the plane crash in multiple places in the town, and it's such a small town, it limits who can get in and out of this town as well, because the interstate is there's a 18 car pileup because of plane debris falling on there that's caused this huge accident.
Okay,
so no one can get in that way. So
it almost creates a closed door, it creates
sort of a lock room situation, mm-hmm. right? And so you've got this tiny community, and they are basically tasked with saving the world, because this nuclear power plant, with the things that have happened because of the crash,
mm-hmm.
if you follow it through to the logical ending of the damage that's happened mm-hmm. and what could go wrong, it's extinction level event. So she has in there kind of the table of level one nuclear mm-hmm. event, whatever. There's been two level seven nuclear events.
Chernobyl
and then Fukushima.
In Japan. Yes.
This would be a level eight event, which is extinction level, which basically nuclear fallout, nuclear waste will get into the Mississippi River. It will destroy all of the crops. This is a big deal. And so it is this tiny community that is really just faced with this problem, and they have to save the world. And it is what I loved about this book, because I was mm-hmm. telling her, I was sobbing at the end of this book. What I loved about this book is there is sort of a large cast of characters, larger than her other books, that you really get to know very well. Mm-hmm. And, they're all very, very well drawn. You really care about what's happening to these people. She's great because, again, this is another thing we were talking mm-hmm. about, is the pacing in this book. She takes the action to a certain level, and then she gives you a minute.
For people like me.
Yeah. Yes. Because you can't just have this constant level of tension the whole time, because it's not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some moments of levity in there, which it's great.
Gallows humor, if you will.
I was telling her my favorite mm-hmm. character in this book is a guy named RJ. The minute you meet RJ, he's hilarious. The first interaction with mm-hmm. him, I thought was hilarious. But I would really recommend this book, especially if you like action movies, if you like things like Air Force One, if you like that kind of just wholly engrossing story where mm-hmm. you're just going to be flipping, it's great. And even if you think you don't necessarily want to read something that's just in your face action, there is more to this. There's the human aspect of this, and this community. It actually is very sweet.
Well, I would say it would make a great airplane book, but I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't think honestly,
she sells best in airports. So
I wouldn't have a problem reading this book on an mm-hmm. airplane. Like I said, the airplane is very minimal. You can even just kind of forget
how it happens.
Like, I mean, it it's not about that with this one. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah. All right. So what are you reading currently?
Currently, mm-hmm. I'm still finishing up the Les Grossman book. And I'm trying to decide what my next read is going to be. What do you think I should read, Melissa?
I don't know.
Yeah. But I will be reading something new soon.
Yeah, I am reading The Atlas Paradox by mm-hmm. Olivia Blake, which is the second one in her Atlas series. Like the first book in the series is The Atlas Six. Mm-hmm. And that is to fulfill my reading challenge commitment this month, which is a book that's been on your to be read for more than a year, which it's been on my shelves for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I have a couple of those, so that probably will be my next read. I'll have to pull one of those. Ugh, I've got a whole, where we are, Melissa can almost see my entire row of, these are the books I aspirationally want or need to read.
Yeah, that's pretty much my whole house. Like, yes. There are ones that I keep, like all of my signed copies mm-hmm. I keep, but yeah, most of my bookshelves are aspirational reading.
Yes. Yeah.
I saw a meme once that was talking about like how you know the person who's visiting your house is not a book person is mm-hmm. when they look at your bookshelves and like, oh, you've read all these? No. No, I have not.
No. There are certain bookshelves in my house where I have read most of those books because they're the ones I wanted to keep.
But yeah, but mine are all in alphabetical order by author, so mm-hmm. the ones that I want to keep are yeah. mixed in with everything else.
Mine started out that way, but things have not gone as planned.
Well, so again, if you are doing our reading challenge, mm-hmm. Be sure to tag us and share what you've been reading for each month, and you are entered. If you complete the challenge, you'd be entered into a drawing to win a gift card to the store, which yes. is very exciting. And I have, interacted with some people on Instagram, mm-hmm. especially the one which was a second chance at a did not finish, uh-huh. that have really taken it for the team and did not enjoy what they read but, even for the second time, but they did it for the chance of winning a gift card. And y'all are good soldiers.
Yes. So thank you.
Thank you for playing along and being good sports.
Yes. And we look forward to seeing you in September.
Well, we're not going to see you. We'll talk to you.
We'll talk to you. It's true. It'd be weird if we saw all of you, yeah. our audience.
Yes. But yes, we'll be back in September, and I hope you have a good rest of August.
Yes. Enjoy those false fall days out there.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right.